The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
Lashback Friday, Zero Macro Aggressions, taking you back to September 5th, 2023, episode 366, The Five Masterminds of 9/11. Start stacking silver automatically each month by becoming a member of the Wolf Pack. Just go to macroaggressions.gold to find out how. Now enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Perdita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macro aggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host,
buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. If you like the show, share it. If you like the show, rate it and write a little review. It helps the algorithms. We appreciate that. Big thanks to all of our sponsors that make the show happen, without whom we'd be in a lot of trouble. Thanks to My Patriot Supply. They've got storable food if you need it, and you very well might need it. Definitely a good idea to have some on hand to get you through some of the rough parts. They built a landing page specific to this show, www.preparewithmacroaggressions.com. That's the place where you can go. You can get discounts on a 3-month supply of food. You can get a year of food if you want. There's all sorts of supplies there as well. If maybe you're set up with everything that you need, but someone in your family is out of state and you know they're unprepared, you can buy it for them, have it drop shipped to them. It'll just arrive at their house in a couple of boxes, open up the boxes, and inside there will be buckets of food that will last you for a quarter of a century. I don't know how good they'll be in year 24, but listen, you'll live. And you probably won't need it, but at least you'll have it in case you do. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the place to go. You get yourself sorted out in about 10 minutes. Also, thanks to Chemical Free Body, we know that they are making the best chemical supplements out there, best in an industry, let's be honest, that's very sketchy and filled with a bunch of scammers that are making a bunch of garbage. Tim James is not doing that. He is dedicated to improving your life through improving your health. He saved his own life by doing this. If you need help with this, if you've decided that now is the time where you're going to get serious about taking care of your health and that nobody's coming to save you except you, go to chemicalfreebody.com and take a look around. See what you think. If you find something that you like the Green 85 or the Detox Bundle, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money. If you think you might need additional help, you can hire Tim to be a coach as well. Or listen to his podcast, Health Hero, and get yourself some free health tips that way. But it's just very important that we get honest about this. I mean, the food that we eat is poisonous, and we don't typically take as good of care of ourselves as we should. And listen, Chemical Free Body has products that work. They will improve your health. And if you are inclined to do so, just go to their website, do a little bit of shopping, find something you like. The promo code on the way out is MACRO. Well, I want to mention one more thing. It is an appearance that I'm going to be doing, a presentation that I'm going to be doing. I think it ties in nicely to this episode. Free World NYC, Saturday, September 9th, 2023, the weekend before 9/11. We are going to be in New York City. I will be there with Richard Gage. I will be there with Don Jeffries, Wayne McCroy, Tony Arterburn, John Brisson, Gardner Goldsmith, and the host who's putting it all together and also one of the speakers, Billy Ray Valentine. So if you're going to be in Manhattan on the weekend of September 11th, we would love to hear from you. We'd love to have you come by. There's a link in the description. You can get tickets to it. It's going to be an all-day event. It's going to be a pretty good one, I think. And I want to promote it to the extent that I can. So if you're going to be in that general vicinity, come on over and see us. Free World NYC is what it's called, Saturday, September 9th, 2023. The link is in the description. You can get to it through Eventbrite. If you had Eventbrite and Free World NYC, you'd probably find it there. So let's talk about 9/11. For my generation, it's our Kennedy assassination. We've talked about 9/11 plenty on this. It was the event that woke me up to all of this fuckery. It is the event that keeps on giving. If you are, if you were there, I was 28. I was 28, about to be 29 when it happened. I was in Manhattan Beach, California, living there, watching it with my roommates. Your mind is blown. And we were a group of guys that, had a pretty good sense of humor about things. There was nothing funny about that day. It was rough. And I'd love to say I knew right off the bat that there was something fishy, but I really didn't. I didn't know what I didn't know. And now I think looking back on it, now we know quite a bit. And one of the things I want to do with this episode is get into the naming of names. We've talked about this a lot. We've mentioned some names. We've mentioned the guys from the Project for a New American Century and the Israel connections and the Saudis and some of those people. But I want to escape from mere generalizations and name some names, talking about who was really masterminding this. Depends on how you want to think of it. This is the high level operations. These aren't the guys that rigged the detonators. These are the guys that came up with the concept of 9/11 and knew where they needed to put their people and knew where the pressure points were. They knew how the government worked. I think that's an important component to this. Now, if you and me and a couple of friends get hammered tonight and we start talking about how we're going to do the next 9/11, it's only so far we can take it, right? We might be able to say, well, the government would do X, Y, and Z. We think they'd do that. But truth is, we don't work in the government. We don't know the ins and outs of that. We don't know where the soft spots are. We don't know what the government actually can do, you know, and what they really can't do. We don't know who would be in charge of hunting us down, and we don't know how they would be able to figure out who it was. But I'll tell you what, the people that planned 9/11, they knew how it worked. They knew how to turn off the security system before they left. Do you understand what I mean? They knew how to lower the defenses and create a scenario in which it was easy for this thing to happen. And part of it was the deep planning and putting their people in positions of power that they could make things happen or prevent other things from happening, meaning like investigations or whatnot. But also just knowing the method of operation of the government is extremely helpful. So you've got to have people in this planning phase that know what will happen. If A happens, then B happens. They need to know what happens in that scenario. They need to know, well, it's going to go from this office to that office, and then from that office to this guy, and then this guy is going to contact all these people, and then those people are going to do this. If you know the process, you can make sure that it doesn't happen the way it normally does. You can make sure that it happens the way you need it to. And so when I'm not going to be talking too much about the middle management of 9/11, I'm not going to be talking about the people that got on the telephone and issued the stand down orders. And I'm not going to talk about the people that were in the basement level of Building 7 rigging detonators or anything like that. What we're going to talk about is the high level masterminds behind 9/11, who they were, what their backgrounds were, why those people were perfect for this operation, and how they connected into this, how they plugged into this whole scenario, this deep state scenario. I'm not going to be coming at this from, I'm not going to be covering the Saudi component. I'm not going to be talking about the Israeli or the Pakistani side. This is going to be strictly the Americans that were in charge of this operation. Now, I'm going to mention some of the Saudis, and I'm going to mention some of the Israelis, but this is not meant to be a complete deep dive into every single person that was involved in 9/11. We're taking the top five of them, okay? If you want to talk about this and think of this as the board of directors of 9/11, you can think of it like that. Not the C-level people, not the middle management people, but the board of directors, the people, the advisory board, the people that you would go to if you were in a process of trying to pull off 9/11 beforehand, and you'd say, I have a question that only about five people in the world could possibly answer. These are the five people you'd go to discuss how we would actually move this process of destroying America and kickstarting the war on terror. So these are the five people that would be in a position to know. There's a group inside the neocon faction that nobody's really talking about. They're very dangerous, of course. They're very secretive. They're very much involved with the planning of 9/11. And, they're the thought leaders on this. They're the ones that conceptualized this, that understood what to do in order to get the response that you want. This is 9/11. If ever there was a problem, reaction, solution, scenario, it's 9/11. I mean, it is. And you can see this because the planners understood that they needed the proper reaction in order to get the solution, in order to be in a position to offer the solution that they wanted to offer all along, which was, we've got to go into the Middle East and start bombing people. We've got to remake the Middle East, even if it doesn't make any sense, even if these guys are in caves in Tora Bora, or even if you're trying to tie Iraq to this and people are going, what? You know, it doesn't matter. The solution is an invasion and remaking of the Middle East. How are we going to work backwards in order to justify this $1 trillion, multi-year, multi-decade war that we're planning to kickstart. So these people are terrorists. These people are mass murderers. This was an act of terrorism. It was an act of war. It was not an act of war by 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters. This was an act of war by participants inside the Bush administration, inside the Netanyahu administration, Pakistani ISI, people that came from the House of Saud. So this is a big group, okay? But we're not going to talk about all of the smaller players. And by smaller, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to say that they're not dangerous. I'm just trying to say that these are the not the five that would sit on, you know, the council of 9/11. Right? So, and again, just so I'm crystal clear, it's not meant to be a detailed list. If you say, well, what about this guy and what about that guy? This guy was deeply involved in it too. Yes, of course, you're probably right. If you want to talk to me about some guys that were deeply involved in the financial component of it, amazing. I'm into it. But these are just the masterminds that would sit on a council and direct this on from on high. Many more people need an examination, but we're going to start with this group because they're super powerful and nobody's talking about them. So who is this? Who is this secret group that nobody wants to talk about? Well, I'll tell you, it was so secret that I didn't even know about it until a couple of years ago, until John Brisson, one of the speakers at the 9/11 event that I'm going to be speaking at this year, John Brisson explained to me this group and said, oh no, you've never heard of this group before? Well, they're really good at keeping themselves quiet, but here's who they are and here's what they do. So a couple years ago, I started looking into them and I thought, this is interesting. But the more I dug, the more I realized John Brisson is 100% right with who these people are and what they want. If you want to think of this as a, I got to put everything in like sports analogies in my brain. It's like these are like the all-stars of the Project for a New American Century. Okay. A group of people that aren't just a globalist, one world government, Zionist lunatics, but within that group, this is the all-star team. So this is like you take the best out of the best. And by best, I mean the craziest people you've ever met. Let's talk about this group. Have you ever heard of Lesercle? L-E-C-E-R-C-L-E. Lesercle. It means the circle in French. This is a group that was established in 1952. It was European-centric for the first 15 years. In the late 60s, they wound up opening it up to the Americans as well. And now the way it's set up is that every year there are two meetings. There's a director for the European side of Lesercle, and there's a director on the American side. They spend 3 days in Europe. They spend 3 days in America. This happens every year. The members of this group are very secretive, extremely powerful, and I think it goes without saying, the most dangerous people on the planet. No exaggeration. I think maybe the Committee of 300 is the most powerful group. These people are members of the Committee of 300. So it's just a smaller version, a smaller, more dangerous, more terrifying version of Bilderberg would be Lesercle. Let's see. They, according to Chairman Richard McCormick, he says this group is mostly retired senior officials from NATO countries, that they meet 3 days in Europe, 3 days in the USA to discuss global affairs. .. that they intend to control through murder, intimidation, and world wars. So this is, they get their funding from a couple places. They get their funding, well, one of the places they've gotten a lot of funding from was the government of South Africa. But that was in part because the government of South Africa was lobbying them to keep pushing the apartheid government that they wanted to maintain. And so Lesercle was helping to keep the apartheid going in South Africa. I never said this was a good group of people. I just said they were powerful. They're definitely up to no good. They also get their money from the CIA, which is wonderful. You know, what could possibly go wrong with that? And they're really great at regime change. That's their specialty. And there's two ways that they do the regime change ops. I guess you could call it the easy way and the hard way. The easy way being election interference. We're just going to come in and mess with your polls, mess with your elections, put our people in power and whatnot. So, kind of finance our candidates, the candidates that we like, or maybe install the candidates that we like. So that's one version. That's, of course, considered the easy way to regime change a country. But they're not opposed to doing it the hard way either, which involves destabilizing it from the outside and getting that country all softened up and then using death squads like they did in Central America and South America to really destabilize things, get people terrified and go in there and even invade. So they're going to change your government whether you want them to or not, if they decide that they want to change your government. They have influenced elections in the United Kingdom, in France, in Germany, in Spain, in Portugal, in Italy, in Belgium, and I would suggest inside the United States as well. In fact, I'll go beyond mere speculation about regime change in the United States. I'll go and say that Les Urquell is directly responsible for Ronald Reagan coming to power. He got elected because of them. This group decided, obviously through, vetting processes at such places like Bohemian Grove and making sure that this guy was down for the team, they decided that Ronald Reagan was going to be the next president of the United States, and he was. So, it's the part of the deep state that you never hear about. I mean, you hear about the activities and you know that these things are happening and there's some names to get thrown out, but you go, well, globalists or Bilderberg guys, or maybe maybe Council on Foreign Relations guys. Like, yeah, sure. All those people are definitely involved in these things. But Les Urquell is sort of, if you think of all of the other groups as being the military, then Les Urquell would be the Navy SEALs of the military. Very specialized, very small, very dangerous, deep operators, very trusted within the dark shadows of government. These are people that can be counted on to get the job done, to do it right, to do it quietly, to not make a lot of mistakes. And if anybody threatens this operation, these are people that do not have any sort of hesitation to murder them or have them murdered. So again, it's not just a think tank or some NGO that gets together that talks about how they would like the world to be. These guys make the world the way it is. They're an international coalition of right-wing intelligence veterans, propaganda assets, and top politicians who would shape the 70s and 80s. That's how they were described. That's how they're described in the 90s. They didn't stop at the 80s, I assure you. They've continued. This has gone on for quite a while. It's been a thing since 1952. One of the things that they are big on, especially in Europe, is promoting European integration for the EU. They were deeply behind that. They have a globalist mindset. They want to click up all of these countries into larger groups so that they can control them. It's just easier that way. Major ties to arms dealings, that Les Urquell was involved in the Iran-Contra affairs, running guns there. They were involved with, they sold weapons to Saddam Hussein. They sold chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein. We're going to get into who was behind that. But they were started in post-World War II Europe, 1952. So you're just coming out of World War II, and they're worried about the spread of the Soviet Union. Much like NATO was worried that, well, listen, if we leave Western Europe now that World War II's done and we've sort of split up Berlin in half and we've got the Soviets on one side and the West on the, you know, the Allied forces on the other side. We're good right now, right? Because we're sort of balanced, but we're leaving. We, America, American troops, we're not staying here. We're not moving here permanently. We're going home. So Europe, what are you guys going to do if the Soviets decide that they, you know, after we leave, they want to creep forward? Well, we talked about this before. This was the Operation Gladio that was financed and created by NATO. And NATO left this leave behind force, Operation Gladio, in case they needed them. And this was like a covert operation that would conduct. Well, they were supposed to just be there in case the Soviets decided to re-advance and finish this journey and take the final parts of Western Europe, which never wound up happening, but Gladio agents were sort of stationed everywhere. And so this idea of Le Cercle came out of that as well. Early 50s, Western Europe, it was a big deal. Germany, France, UK, Spain, Portugal, the Western European countries, a lot of them, not limited to them, but it just seemed like that was mostly who was involved in this. And they were very concerned about what happens if the Soviets come back. So they were building a team of people that could be helpful with destabilizing that. Quietly, covertly, of course. You're not supposed to know who these people are. You're not supposed to know that they're involved. Some of these people have run major corporations and they don't need that sort of heat. But in the case, in the event that we need you guys to help out, we're there, right? So this is the reason why it came out of the Cold War and all the reasons behind that. Former members of this group back in that day would have been Richard Nixon was a member of Le Cercle, Margaret Thatcher, and also Reinhard Gehlen, who was a fucking Nazi. Okay, so it wasn't like there was some purity test to join this group. In fact, the more nefarious and devious you were, the more they probably wanted you in there because you were somebody that got things done. So with this in mind, Let's think about 9/11, right? You've got a group of people together and you know you're building this organization. You've got a plan for world government. You're going to remake the Middle East. You have this idea. What we really need is a big holy war, right? We need it to be the West versus the unwashed Muslims in the Middle East. And we can sit around and wait for this to happen. And maybe we'll piss off, Hezbollah or some group will make them mad enough that they'll decide to covertly come to America and shoot some people or set off a car bomb in Times Square and kill a dozen people or whatever, right? So you can sit around and wait for that to happen if you'd like. But if you're a bloodthirsty empire like the American Empire, you might be waiting a long time for that. So what they decided to do instead was, let's not wait for these deranged Arabs to attack us. Let's attack ourselves, pretend like it was deranged Arabs, and then we'll say the Arabs attacked us unprovoked. We have to defend ourselves, and therefore we're going to launch this war of terror. They called it the war on terror. Of course, we all know it to be a war of terror on the Middle East and on these countries, and we're going to remake seven countries in 5 years and all that good stuff. So that's the lead up to 9/11, right? That's 9/11 for dummies. So you get to a point where you go, okay, well, how are we going to make the Arabs attack us? Well, they're going to have to need, you know, they're going to need airplanes, but they can't fly. Yeah, well, we'll figure that out. They're going to fly them into trade center buildings. Do we have trade center buildings under our control? We don't yet, but we've got Silverstein working on it. He'll have control of them by the time we get this thing up and running. Just trust, you do your job, we'll do ours. We'll get Larry in there. He'll have control of it. Don't worry. We'll have 7 weeks to rig them. We'll be good, right? So this is the planning, right? This is sort of the thoughts behind, okay, so they fly into the buildings. All right, we got Pentagon. All right, what are we going to do with the Pentagon? Well, the general public doesn't know it yet, but there's $2.3 trillion that are missing. We've got a group of people inside the Pentagon that have alerted us to that. Of course, we, these globalist scumbags, we know that the $2.3 trillion is missing. We're the ones that stole it. And we certainly don't want these do-gooders in the Pentagon to figure this out. So what we'll do is we're going to have to get rid of all those guys that are investigating this. But I have a plan. We got a guy inside the Pentagon that can make that happen. Okay. So this is the sort of thinking, you know, and then once all this goes on, now what are we going to do? Well, the media is going to need to cover it. Obviously, the media is going to want to cover it, but we're going to need to make sure that the media immediately starts off down one path, right? That they start thinking of it as, you know, maybe there's only two or three people that could have pulled off something like this. And so we set the narrative early on with the news media that this is going to happen. How are we going to do that? Don't worry. We got a couple guys. I got a guy in America that'll be great for this. And then I've got a guy, an Israeli guy out of the UK who'll be great for this. Don't worry about it. Okay, so we can get the media taken care of. Okay, well, what about the U.S. military? The U.S. military isn't going to allow planes to be flying around and everything. I mean, they'll shoot them out of the sky before they have a chance to fly into these towers that you say Larry Silverstein's going. How can we be assured that we'll get the military out of the way? Okay, well, we've thought of that too, and we're going to position all of the fighter jets, all the ones that we have stationed on the East Coast, we're going to move them to the West Coast and up into Alaska for training exercises, right? Nobody will know the difference. It'll be on a kind of a normal schedule, but what we'll do is we'll move them out of the way for training exercises. Okay, that sounds great, but that's a high-level decision. Do we have a guy in place that can make the call to move them out of the way? Yeah, we got him. Don't worry. We got him. We got him. We're installing him right now. He's going to wind up becoming the vice president of the United States, and he's going to take care of that for you. Okay, good, good, good. Good to know. Good. So, all right. So this is sort of what I'm talking about here. This is the working out of the macro level information of 9/11. And this is what these guys were doing. Okay. Now, we know about the Project for a New American Century. The neocons, Zionists, inside the Bush-Cheney administration. There's a Venn diagram of overlap between Lester Kell and PNAC, for sure. So I'm going to do this. I want you to think of these members. I'm going to name the five masterminds of this operation. Not quite yet, though. But what I'm going to do first is I'm going to name members of Lester Kell that were deeply involved in 9/11, but not the masterminds. This is why I want you to understand that it's not just Zionists, it's not just PNAC, but it is an all-star team within this group that had a deeper level of commitment to this. And when I mention these names, the hair on the back of your neck is going to stand up. Because you're going to say, how the fuck did I never hear about this group, Lester Kell? And yet, all these members are the most dangerous people in society. Well, you haven't heard about it because they don't want you to hear about it. So let's start with this. And this is in no particular order, but I'm going to start with one of the worst human beings around. Donald Rumsfeld was a member of Lester Kell. John Bolton. Henry Kissinger. Zbigniew Brzezinski, L. Paul Bremer, Alan Greenspan, David Rockefeller, Paul Volcker, Richard Perle, Benjamin Netanyahu, Shimon Peres, Paul Wolfowitz, Antonin Scalia, Ted Shackley, Chairman of the America version of Lester Kell, Ted Shackley, Richard Armitage, Louis Free, Chuck Hagel, Richard McCormick, the now current chairman after the passing of Ted Shackley, and last on the list, Benazir Bhutto, Pakistani prime minister. This is not everybody that is a member of the group. These are just the American side, and a couple Israelis in here too. So when I say, how are we going to handle the media? Oh, we've got a guy in America and we've got an Israeli guy in the UK. They'll be the first ones to do it. The first person to go on American media on MSNBC on the morning of September 11th was L. Paul Bremer. He was the first person inside American media to say that in his experience through what he's been working on, that Osama bin Laden was one of the only people that could have pulled off something quite like this. Now, L. Paul Bremer was a Marshall McLennan guy. He was conveniently in the offices of MSNBC to give that interview, mentioning that he was certain that Osama bin Laden was, well, he said he was one of a handful of people, one of three people that it could have been, but he named him by name, didn't mention the other people by name. He mentioned him specifically. But what was interesting about L. Paul Bremer was that he should have died in the event, but he didn't. He left. He left to go give that interview. Interesting. As for the Israeli in the UK who was doing the same thing at the same time, well, we had you had Shimon Peres, and you had him in the UK giving a presentation, talking about this at the same time. Ehud Barak was also on the news in the UK giving these messages to the media. So what you had was you had multiple sources on multiple continents giving the same story at the exact same time about who could have been responsible for this. And Osama bin Laden's name was the one that just kept coming up immediately. Start the narrative off essentially with that, right? So you've got L. Paul Bremer, you've got the Israelis talking about this. You need to, you know, who's going to be controlling this with the Pakistanis? We need their ISI involved in this. Don't worry, we've got Benazir Bhutto. Benazir Bhutto is prime minister of Pakistan, was a lady. She was murdered in broad daylight. Who knows, might have had something to do with her 9/11 connections. But you definitely had people in place. We had Donald Rumsfeld on this list, as you know. We have Alan Greenspan, who was running the Federal Reserve at the time, had deep knowledge of this. You had Paul Volcker, who had been involved in the money moving business as well. These guys, most of them are Zionists on this list, is, you know, not a surprise. Fair bit of overlap. When you get into the American side of Lesser Kell, you find some Zionists. And when you get into the European side, you find fewer. But in America, these were people that had that overlap. So let's get into it. Let's talk about who was involved. Let's talk about who the planners were. Okay, again, I'll do the song and dance, the disclaimer. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list of everybody who had some important role in 9/11. I'm just talking about the board of directors of it. Okay. Number one on this list, I'm going to put Super Spook Ted Shackley. He was the key, deeply involved, high-level operator. His resume is something out of a horror film. He was involved in the JFK assassination. He ran the CIA secret war in Laos. He was involved in the Chilean Pinochet dictatorship and the disappearances of 40,000 people. He was the deputy director of covert operations at the CIA under George H.W. Bush in 1976. He was deeply involved in the Iran-Contra affair. He was an arms smuggler. He was set up in Kuwait with an oil consulting firm through his relationship with George H.W. Bush. While they were both at the CIA, George H.W. Bush was running the CIA. Ted Shackley was his guy who was in charge of covert operations. And then they were operating on behalf of the Nixon administration to covertly bomb the shit out of Laos. Okay. So This is one of the deepest of the deep state guys. And you have to understand this, you know, like if I had this on my resume, I'd be going to prison, of course. But if you're Ted Shackley and you have this on your resume, you're a trusted operator. You've got, you have proven yourself that you can handle these tasks. You can get them finished. You can get them accomplished. I mean, Kennedy did get killed. So it was, the mission was a success. And nobody understood how the involvement of the CIA, you know, how deep that was until years after the fact. Even still now, they're protecting that information from being let out. So Shackley was involved in this, but here's one that'll throw you for a loop. Okay. Because it'll sort of punctuate how good this guy was at his job. Okay. Ted Shackley was involved in the Lockerbie, Scotland, Pan Am bombing cover up. Now, the official story that we know of is that Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland was blown up by the Libyans who put a bomb in it, right? And blew that thing to smithereens in the late 80s, mid 80s. I think it was 86. I want to say 86. International headline news. Obviously, if you listen to this episode, you know, this is Muammar Gaddafi. I've sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department. That was because in the 80s, when Jim Brewer is telling that story about working at Sears, in the 80s, Pan Am Flight 103 had just been blown up over Lockerbie, Scotland by the Libyans. But that isn't actually what happened. You see, what really wound up happening on that flight was that it wasn't the Libyans that blew it up. It was the Iranians. And nobody knew that. And nobody was talking about that. They were going to know it. And they were going to be talking about it. But when that thing blew up, Ted Shackley recognized, rightly so, holy shit. We, the CIA, we're so deep undercover, we're already working with the Iranians. We are so embedded with them that if the general public figures out that the Iranians are behind this, they're going to figure out that we're working with them, that we're involved in all of this covert stuff that we're not supposed to be involved in. So in order to throw the media and the general public off of the scent of the Iranians, Ted Shackley created the story that it was Muammar Gaddafi that did it, and that it was actually the Libyans. And so to this day, the general public believes that the Libyans did the Lockerbie bombing. Libya even paid out a settlement, hundreds of millions of dollars in this farce. But they did so because Ted Shackley had to cover the fact that the CIA was so far in bed with the Iranians that any sort of casual investigation was going to discover that. And so they pinned it on Gaddafi, and Shackley did a masterful job of it. And that's why he's trusted. And that's why he would be on the board of directors for a 9/11 hit. Because if anybody knows how to manipulate the media, bomb things and pin it on, you know, your enemies, pin it on people that had nothing to do with it, drive that for decades, make sure that story stuck for decades. I mean, that's your audition tape right there, baby. You think you might be able to handle 9/11? Who do you think did the Lockerbie bombing? Well, the Libyans, of course. Well, then that answers your question. He was very close friends, this Ted Shackley character. He was known as the blonde ghost back in the JFK days because nobody knew what he looked like. Nobody could get a picture of him. Pictures of him now. But he was very good friends with Richard Armitage, who's on this list as a Lesser Kell member. And the guy who got passports for terrorists, you might have remembered him. And also very close friends with a guy named Frank Carlucci. So let's talk about Frank Carlucci for a minute here, because this is a name that a lot of people don't know. I don't recognize it. It's not one that jumps out at you. But he's another super spook just like Shackley. And you have, you know, listen, if you are a deep operator like these guys are, it pays to not be all over the newspapers, you know, back in the day. It was kind of better that people didn't know who you were. So if you don't recognize these names, that isn't because they weren't real players. It's because they actually were real players and you don't recognize their names because it benefits these people for you to not recognize their names. But Frank Carlucci is a name that you're going to know. You better know, because he was one of the masterminds of 9/11. Okay. And let me read off his resume. It's that of a devious supervillain. Okay. Deputy Director, CIA, 1978, 1981. Okay. Deputy Secretary of Defense. That's like not the Secretary of Defense. You're just one notch down. He then later became Secretary of Defense from 1987 to 1989 under Ronald Reagan. He became National Security Advisor under Ronald Reagan. So the equivalent of what Jake Sullivan is to Joe Biden, that's what Frank Carlucci was to Ronald Reagan. Mind you, Cold War, USSR, all that good stuff. He's on the board of trustees of RAND Corporation, which is a globalist think tank. He's the board of directors of the National Endowment for Democracy. Okay, this, the NED, is the United States regime change operation. So again, think about this resume in terms of who would you need to pull off 9/11? CIA, Secretary of Defense, Deputy Secretary of Defense, National Security Advisor, Board of Trustees of a neocon think tank, RAND, that maps out every strategy, how wars would start and how, you know, what needs to happen. And then a Board of Directors for National Endowment for Democracy, the regime change group. So he's got a deep understanding of how all this works. And then chairman of the Carlyle Group from 92 until 2005. So the Carlyle Group, if that name is ringing a bell for you, it should. On the morning of September 11th, there was a meeting in Washington, D.C., in which George H.W. Bush was meeting with the Bin Laden family. Okay, so again, I've mentioned this before. Think of the mathematical impossibility that the president of the United States at the time, George W. Bush, his dad was having a meeting at the very same time 9/11 was happening with Osama bin Laden's family. Okay. But 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters totally pulled off 9/11. And the American government had no idea that this was happening. They just magically, I mean, talk about buying a Powerball ticket. If you were going through that day with that level of coincidence that the president of the United States dad was having a meeting with the suspected terrorist dad at the same time that the terrorism was happening, and they call us conspiracy theorists, please. Okay. Deep operator, extremely well regarded inside this operation, very well trusted. Frank Carlucci was a guy you could go get into business with something like this. He's one of the reservoir dogs. Okay. Mr. Pink here. But Mr. Pink, in another amazing coincidence, which may actually be a coincidence, but fuck, it'd be really hard for me to wrap my head around this being an actual coincidence. But when Frank Carlucci was in college at Princeton University, out of all of the people at that school that he could have been roommates with, he was roommates with Donald Rumsfeld. So let's talk about that piece of shit, Donald Rumsfeld, okay? Let's talk about this guy, because he's number three on the list of 9/11 masterminds. And this guy was dangerous. He was one of those, he was like the Ted Bundy of the Pentagon, you know, big smile, good looking guy. Hey, it's Don Rumsfeld. Hey, Don from accounting, you know, hey, how's it going there, Steve? How's the wife and kids? You know, it's Don Rumsfeld. Hey, how's it? Good to meet you. Good to see you again. You look great. You know, that fucking guy who never saw a news camera. He didn't love as well. So let's talk about Donald Rumsfeld and how dangerous this guy was, because he was, he was in he got in politics right away, as quickly as he could. He had big plans for destroying this country. He was the ambassador to NATO from 1973 to 1974. He then became the White House chief of staff from 1974 to 75. He was the Secretary of Defense from 75 to 77. And then he was the chairman of RAND Corporation. Isn't that weird? From 81 to 86. So again, if you're the RAND Corporation, what are the chances that you got somebody from your board of trustees and your chairman out of the same dorm room at the same school at the same year? Wow. That's just amazing, isn't it? He was, Donald Rumsfeld came back after going to RAND Corporation. This is what they like to do. They go into government, high-level positions inside government. They work during that administration. Then a new administration comes in that's incompatible with their, I don't know, it just doesn't work for them, or it's just a new team, right? So then they rotate out of government. They leave, he stops being Secretary of Defense in 77, and of course there's a lot of turnover with Nixon and Ford and Carter and this whole kind of era of the 70s. So he's working over multiple administrations. He's on Nixon, he's on Ford, when Jimmy Carter comes in, then he says, I'm out, right? He leaves and goes into private business and works for RAND Corporation. And he works for a company called, he becomes the CEO of GD Cerol, which is a chemical company. Now, this is the company that was busy making aspartame, the chemical sweetener that's in Diet Coke and everything like that. Now, aspartame tried for 10 years, or GD Cerol, the parent company, tried for 10 years to get this product, aspartame, approved by the FDA, and they couldn't do it. The problem is, it was giving all the rats tumors, and there was nothing they could do to hide that fact. And they kept trying to do it. They kept trying to submit it differently. And then they started lying about the tests. And then they got to the point where the judge said to the company, the next time you try something like this, you're going to be led out of this courtroom in handcuffs. I am not going to allow you guys to commit fraud doing this. So faced with a last-ditch effort, G.D. Cerol went out and hired Donald Rumsfeld to become their CEO, and he had aspartame approved in less than a year. Okay, so this is why you do that. And then, of course, G.D. Cerol was sold to Monsanto in 1985. So Donald Rumsfeld, even when he's not in government, he's still destroying the world. That was his thing, right? So, but he was also busy during the 80s too. If you remember those kind of semi-grainy videos of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, you see that and you go, what the fuck is happening here? I thought these guys were our enemies. Well, in the 80s, I mean, we were going to sell them chemical weapons, right? I mean, these chemicals, they aren't going to sell themselves, right? You got to have Donald Rumsfeld do it. So what did he do? He partnered up with Saddam Hussein in Iraq and sold them chemical weapons to use against the Iranians, which is crazy because the CIA was simultaneously working to, inside of Iran as well. So it was wild back in the 80s, and Donald Rumsfeld was wild. He was out of his mind. He was in Bilderberg, CFR, Trilateral Commission, Les Cercle. And then he comes back in. And this is where most people know Donald Rumsfeld from. If you're old, I'm 50, right? I was born in 72. So I don't remember when Rumsfeld came in the first time around. I certainly remember the second time around. Anyone that's older than me probably has some recollection of him the first go around, or maybe you've seen the pictures of him with the 70s outfit. It looks like there's some sort of disco ball happening inside the Oval Office or something. You could tell by their ridiculous outfits. So Rumsfeld, there he was in the 70s. And then he comes back in the George W. Bush administration and becomes Secretary of Defense for a second time from 2001 to 2006. Now, this is very important because when you're going to conduct 9/11, you have to have the right people in positions of power. So you put Donald Rumsfeld in at Secretary of Defense when you intend to commit a crime that exposes the lack of defense of the United States. You understand? So mistakes were made. Mistakes were made. Rumsfeld comes in to make mistakes in advance of 9/11 to leave the back door open so that the event can take place. But he's Donald Rumsfeld, so he's deeply trusted. He's in this to his core. He's never getting out. This is blood in, blood out for Rumsfeld, for all these guys. There's no change of heart. There's no, I saw the light. I had an epiphany. I'm sitting this one out. It doesn't work that way. This is what you're in here for. We didn't put you in here for no reason. Donald Rumsfeld not only sold chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein in the 80s, but then had him murdered 20 years later, if you recall. Financed his purchase of American weapons. Loaned Saddam Hussein money to buy weapons from America to use on Iran so that we could at some point later say, he bought chemical weapons from us. He must be he bought chemical weapons. He must be making chemical weapons that he's going to use on our troops that go to invade or wherever. You know, we have to do something about him because he's going to use chemical weapons. Well, how do you know he's going to use chemical weapons? Well, because he has all these chemicals. Well, how do you know he has all these chemicals? Because I kind of sold them to him in the 80s. That's how I know he has all the chemicals. That's how he knew that Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons, was because he fucking sold them to him. It's like selling drugs to some guy, you know, like you're an undercover cop. You sell drugs to the guy and then the guy gets arrested. He's like, how'd you know I had drugs in my pocket? Well, because I sold them to you like 10 minutes ago. Don't you remember that? That's what happened with Saddam Hussein. He got double crossed. Hey, Zelensky. Here is your future. You're about to have some, you're about to get invaded because you guys have chemical weapons. Yes, but you give me these chemical weapons. Yeah, but you still, but you have them, right? That's why we're invading you. So get ready for it. But again, when you're talking about Rumsfeld, you're talking about a psychopath that has the ability to blend in with society. This is what makes him exceptionally dangerous. I mean, they're all, of course, have their own specialty, but Rumsfeld's ability to come across as kind of human is one of his more diabolical traits, which is one of the reasons why it was very important for him to be the face of this problem that the Pentagon and Department of Defense discovered. Now, they discovered that there was $2.3 trillion missing. You might also recognize this from the entry opening to the podcast as well. With Donald Rumsfeld making that announcement, we cannot account for $2.3 trillion of transactions. Well, that statement, that audio sound clip that you hear, that was given on September 10th, 2001. Now, back to buying lotto tickets. That is an amazing coincidence. Knowing how the media operates and knowing that they'll take a story and run with it for a week, or maybe two if it's really important, maybe 3 weeks if it's a real scandal, I would say that $2.3 trillion that goes missing from the Pentagon Department of Defense would be kind of a story that might be interesting to get to the bottom of. It certainly sounds scandalous. And at the very least, it's worth examining and talking about on the news for a week, maybe two. But when you understand how the news cycle actually works, you know that if a much bigger story comes along, like people missing in a submarine or Kim Kardashian's having another baby, you know, or 9/11, you know, it's going to get pushed out of the headline cycle pretty fast. So if you're Donald Rumsfeld and you are about to deliver really bad news that is going to paint your administration as incompetent at best and criminally liable, realistically, then you announce that the day before 9/11. Or you have a hell of a coincidence in which you picked the day before 9/11 to announce the one thing that might rightly get you guys strung up, investigated, put in prison, or whatever. So that's what Rumsfeld did, is he made the announcement to the general public on September 10th. He said, we can't account for this money. And then he did something else. After that meeting, he then made the announcement to everybody that was working on the missing money. He said, tomorrow morning, I want you all in that conference room right there. We're going to get to the bottom of this missing money. I want every single person that is on this case in that room. And with them, I want you all to bring all of the evidence that you've got. We're not leaving this room until we get to the bottom of what happened to all of that fucking money, and bring all your documents and all your paperwork. Get in that boardroom. We're going to figure it out. That boardroom is where the missile struck that hit the Pentagon, killing everybody involved, destroying all the evidence that they had brought to that meeting. Rumsfeld, of course, was not in the meeting. He couldn't be found. Actually, he was found later, wandering out onto the grass in front of the Pentagon, picking up parts to help with the cleanup of the wreckage of the, well, not an airplane, because there were no airplane parts. It was a missile fired from a submarine off the coast of America, an Israeli sub. That missile hit the Pentagon right in the office of the comptroller, right where the meeting was taking place, right where everybody that was investigating the missing money was, with all their evidence. They were all evaporated. That's Donald Rumsfeld. Okay. That is a guy who knows how to tie up loose ends. Do you understand what I'm talking about here? Remember, he said on camera, he'd never heard of Building 7, had no idea what people were talking about. Really? He's a soulless killer, you know? And listen, for what it's worth, if you listen to one of the previous 9/11 episodes I did, 9/11 from a different view, where we talked about the remote viewers that after many, many years of saying they, you know, they would never remote view 9/11, Courtney Brown, the head of Farsight, actually snuck in some coordinates and didn't tell the guys that they were doing 9/11, but they wound up doing 9/11 instead. And as Dick Allgaier is drawing the person that is responsible for this, he's drawing it and it's fucking Donald Rumsfeld's face. It's undeniable. You know, moving on from Rumsfeld. This is a guy, he's number four on this list. This is a guy I would consider to be one of the worst human beings to live in the past 40 years. Of course, I'm speaking of George H.W. Bush, father of George W. Bush, son of Prescott Bush of Brown Brother Harriman Bank, trading with the enemy. Brown Brother Harriman financed Hitler's war machine. He was found guilty. I think they would have strung him up and probably hanged Prescott Bush if he hadn't been the president of the USO. That would have looked bad for optics. So they let him kind of skate on this one. But you know, when your dad is financing Adolf Hitler, you're probably going to be a bad guy yourself. And of course, George H.W. Bush was. He wasn't just some dopey vice president who didn't like to eat broccoli. He was, you know, how every vice president kind of gets marginalized. And there, it's the Dan Quayles, it's the Al Gore, the, you know, Mike Pence of the world, Joe Biden. They're just kind of like buffoonish vice presidents that are just fucked up enough so that you can't kill the real president, because then you'd be stuck with the vice president running things. You know what I mean? So they're just one deviation away from being normal, like Mike Pence. Like Mike Pence is like, how many Boy Scouts do you think Mike Pence has buried in his crawl space? A dozen? What's the over under? What's DraftKings giving that? What's the over under? 12? I'm going to go over. I'm going to parlay that with something, however many fucking Boy Scouts Lindsey Graham has in his crawl space too. Can we do a, I want to do a two team teaser. I want Lindsey Graham in the over and I want Mike Pence in the over. And I want to parlay that.
Oh God.
You know, listen, George H.W. I mean, if you listen to Kathy O'Brien's story about what he did to her with an electric cattle prod, and she was heavily tortured by the CIA through the MK Ultra program and everything that had to do with that. George H.W. Bush was involved in that. She named him specifically. She said, I'm not trying to tell you that I think it was anybody else or somebody that kind of maybe sort of looked like him. I'm telling you who it was because I know who it was. It was George H.W. Bush, and he would torture me with a cattle prod constantly. So that's where we start with this guy. He's got a real fake story about World War II, about how he was under all this fire, and there's rumors that he might have parachuted out of his plane and when he didn't need to. I don't know. Those are rumors. I can't really speak to that. But I do know that there's a history of horrible psychopathic decision-making from the Bush family in general, and H.W. Bush in particular. He was, listen, man, while he was alive, he was one of the most dangerous people on the planet. There's no doubt about that. And for him to be involved in the masterminding of 9/11 makes a lot of sense when you take a listen to what his resume is. So let's get into that for a second here. You might have forgotten how deep George H.W. Bush is because you just know him as a guy that was president from 89 to 93. You know, he was only there for 4 years. Most presidents kind of get reelected, but he got bounced by Bill Clinton, and everyone thought, well, that's just because he's weak. Remember George H.W. Bush, the knock on him was he was a wimp. That was what they called him. He was a wimp. I think he loved that designation. It wasn't true, which is why he liked it. He's as a deep operator, you would love for people to think that you're one way when you're actually another. So he headed the... I mean, look, let's just call this what it was. George H.W. Bush was in control of, you know, the deep state that you hear of. George H.W. Bush was in control of the deep state to a fair degree for the better part of two decades. Okay. He was, and not while he was president, you understand? Underneath that, when he was working covertly, he was doing CIA jobs, when he was, involved with Carlyle Group, when he was involved with the Rockefellers and whatnot. So let's talk about his resume. U.S. representative to the United Nations. They always have that. From 71 to 73, that's Rockefellers, of course. He was the chief of the U.S. liaison office to the People's Republic of China from 74 to 75. This is basically he's working on behalf of the U.S. government, but if you asked him in a private moment who his boss was, he would probably say David Rockefeller. This is when he and Rockefeller and Kissinger and Nixon got involved in what they call the opening of China. This was the 5,000 factories with Rockefeller that they financed and sprung into existence in the early 70s and made a fucking fortune off of this. About the same time David Rockefeller opened up Chase Bank in China as well. So you've got financing component through the banking with the Rockefellers and Chase. Then you've got industrial capacity being financed by these groups in conjunction with America at the behest of George H.W. Bush, Henry Kissinger, and David Rockefeller. You know, three extremely dangerous people. George H.W. Bush was the director of the CIA from 1976 to 77 under Ford. He had his very early records of his work in the CIA destroyed when he became director, which is not normal. Unless you're the only guy on the planet that can't remember where you were when JFK was assassinated, which of course he is. He became vice president under Reagan from 1981 to 1989. And I swear he didn't wait more than a year before he had Reagan almost murdered by John Hinckley. John Hinckley, the Hinckley family, and the Bush family go back a long way. Again, another coincidence. George H.W. Bush, you know, in his relationship with the Bin Laden family. And then Bin Laden gets involved and does 9/11, wink, wink. And also, the Bush family has a long relationship with the Hinckley family. And then just so happens that one of the Hinckley kids tries to kill Ronald Reagan, which would have made George H.W. Bush the president. And for the record, Ronald Reagan didn't want George H.W. Bush as his vice president at all. Didn't like the guy. Didn't trust him. You know why he didn't trust him? Because he knew him. That's why he didn't trust him. And I'll be damned, didn't take it but a year before the guy almost tried to fucking kill him, right? He just missed his heart by like a millimeter. One of those lucky shots that Reagan survived. And now John Hinckley is out doing podcasts. And coming to the stage, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome John Hinckley. No, I'm just kidding. That'd be so fucking rad if I had him on, though. Be like, how are you these days, John? Your music, I hear it's decent. He became president, not John Hinckley, not yet. Bush became president of the United States of America in 1989, from 1989 to 93. He started the first Iraq war in Kuwait. So, you know, he's in that camp. I'll start a war. He's in the oil business with the Saudis. They, you know, he's doing a lot of work in Kuwait. The Iraqis were starting some problems with the Kuwaitis. And now, you know, if you do that, when America is protecting oil interests, you'll get yourself in a war. But if you do that when you've got an oil guy in the White House in America, and you do that to his business partners, the Saudis and the Kuwaitis, you're definitely getting some democracy dropped on your ass. And of course, Saddam Hussein did have that coming to him. And, you know, according to the Bushes. And so that's what happened. So that started that first Iraq, or that first Gulf War, which I remember that happening because I was a freshman in college when it was kicking off. And everyone's like, oh no, are we going to, you know, are people going to get drafted and go into this war? But that was a Bush war, and he was involved in that. He had his partner, Bandar Bush, the head of the Saudi, essentially Saudi intelligence, the Saudi CIA, the head of that, Bandar Bush, so close to the Bush family that they jokingly considered him one of their own. George, I mentioned that his father financed Hitler through Brown Brother Harriman. So it's like, there's no problem financing terrorism or maniacs coming to power. That's what the Bush family has always done. They've been in that business for decades, for three generations. They've been involved in that. This is a guy, George H.W. Bush, that mentioned the New World Order over 200 times on camera during his four-year presidential run. That's an average of mentioning it once a week. So he was real into the New World Order. And I don't mean like the pro wrestling type. This was a guy that was had worked with the Rockefellers for a very long time. They were both on the same team. Multiple generations of the Bush family had worked with the Rockefeller family for generations. They knew each other exceptionally well. They were, he's an owner of, you know, the Bushes are quietly super loaded. Part of it came from the Brown Brother Harriman side of things. And the interest that the father had, the grandfather, Prescott Bush, had, George H.W. Bush and his relationship with the Rockefellers and those factories in China, that created a massive amount of money that was flowing in. All of their oil holdings brought in money. God knows how much money they made in terms of like straight pay-for-play operations while Bush was running the CIA, while he was the president of the United States, while he was a board member of Carlyle Group. It's, you know, how you measure that, I don't know. Lots of money coming in for all of these guys. But on top of that, at one point, George H.W. Bush was the largest cocaine trafficker in the world. And Pablo Escobar worked for the CIA, worked, you know, at the behest of the CIA. Maybe not necessarily for the CIA, but he was allowed to operate because of the CIA. And the drugs that were coming from Colombia into America were happening because the CIA was allowing that to happen through the relationships of people like George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton in MENA, Arkansas, and the running of drugs with guys like Barry Seal and the like, Southern Air Transport, that was a CIA drug trafficking airlines that was being used to run the cocaine back and forth, also out of the Golden Triangle in Vietnam. So again, while Ted Shackley was running the covert Laotian bombings in Southeast Asia, George H.W. Bush was at the same time running the drugs out of Southeast Asia through Southern Air Transport. So when I say that these guys worked together before, this is what I'm talking about. They all know that they can run this, you know, they all respect each other's game and their ability to get involved in this. Now, what set George H.W. Bush aside was that he was quietly building, you know, like how presidents will do like the Clinton Foundation or the Obama Library or the Nixon Library or whatever, that these funds, these sort of altruistic charity endeavors that happen sort of after you get out of politics and you do this thing. Now, in the Clintons' case, it's just a money influence peddling racket. With regard to what George H.W. Bush was creating, he built something that was known on the streets as the Enterprise. And the Enterprise was estimated to be comprised of about 5,000 different members of this group, of his criminal organization. You could look at this as a quasi-secret government. They were involved in drug trafficking. This was when the CIA was taking a lot of heat from the media for what they were doing. A portion of the CIA splintered off, and this is that portion, known as the Enterprise. They were involved in drug trafficking, savings and loan fraud, insider trading, insurance fraud, money laundering, Iran-Contra, all of that stuff. And when you investigate this group, you'll find that it's very real. And it's very dangerous. And the people at the top of it are the types that will murder you for exposing this. So the reason why you don't hear much about the Enterprise is because of how dangerous it is to talk about it. But when people do decide to talk about the Enterprise, you might not recognize it from that name. It goes by a different name. Somebody like Danny Castellaro wrote about it. You might know it better as the Octopus. So let's move on. Last person on the list, number 5. Let's talk about a 100-year-old parasite and one of the deepest players in the game and the only person on this list that is still alive, just barely, and that is Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger was deeply involved in the planning of 9/11. Let's talk about his history. 20 years at Harvard, teaching there, Bilderberg almost every year, World Economic Forum almost every year, member of Lesserkell, Secretary of State under Nixon, then Ford, National Security Advisor under Nixon, then Ford, ordered the CIA to overthrow the Chilean government and order them to install our guy. This is back in 1973. This is when Salvador Allende was removed from the presidential role in Chile. And when I say removed, I mean murdered. He was replaced by Augusto Pinochet, who was installed. And then that's when the disappearances began. The disappearances of people that had connections to the government that they wanted to go away. This is upwards of 40,000 people in Chile vanished during this time frame in the early to mid 70s. They just were never heard from again. This was ordered by Henry Kissinger. This was allowed to happen. It was made to happen. This is part of Operation Condor. You might have heard of Henry Kissinger, deeply involved in that. He was, you want to know something funny? This is, I mean, it's not haha funny, but just like, what the hell were you thinking funny? 9/11 happens. And then there's all of this talk. We have to have a 9/11 commission to get to the bottom of what went wrong with all of the failures of 9/11. And so we're going to have to vote on, you know, let's decide who's going to be the chairman of the 9/11 commission. Now, in the end, Lee Hamilton became the chairman of the 9/11 commission, and he was, derided as being sort of a hack who didn't really do a very good job of it. But you have to understand that that position was a protection position. They weren't installing somebody there who was going to actually get to the bottom of the 9/11 situation. They were putting a 9/11 commissioner in there to hide what was actually happening. Now, that's not my, well, I was going to say that's not my opinion. It is my opinion. It's my opinion that that's why they chose who they chose for that group. Now, the reason why that's my opinion is because Lee Hamilton was not the first choice to head the 9/11 commission. Do you remember who was? It was Henry fucking Kissinger. Henry Kissinger was the head of the 9/11 commission for 2 weeks before the Jersey Girls, which was a group of wives in New Jersey that had lost their husbands on 9/11, made so much noise that they got Henry Kissinger removed, and good for them for doing that. But again, that's why they called it the 9/11 omission report, because they didn't even mention Building 7 in it. Okay, just to give you an idea of what a whitewashing that was. Henry Kissinger, Chancellor of the College of William and Mary, and he was so at the time of 9/11. Again, nobody's saying that Henry Kissinger was pushing the buttons and pulling the levers. Henry Kissinger is the guy that has the idea and talks it out with everybody else and says, these are the people you would need. In my opinion, these are the types of people you would need in these positions, and you would need them here, there, and this other place. And Henry would know those guys. He would know how the organizations run after 1.5 million years of being in politics. And he would know who could be trusted, who could be leveraged, who couldn't be trusted, and how to get people in a position of power. So he's this is a guy that wrote National Security Study Memorandum 200 calling for the depopulation of 13 third world countries. This is a guy who has no problem murdering people, okay? Genocide is his thing. He's fine with it. He believes that humanity is filled with useless eaters that need to be purged. He believes this in his soul. He thinks that the world's population should be reduced by 50%. I think let's start with Henry Kissinger and cut him in half and start right there, right? 50% sounds like a good number. Just get ourselves one of those industrial strength, the wood chippers that handles entire trees, and we just put half of them in, right? Problem solved, theoretically. He was the architect of the Vietnam War. Well, he continued. He was the architect of the continuation of the Vietnam War, if I'm being a little bit more accurate with my words here. He allowed it to continue. He covertly authorized the bombing of Cambodia and Laos. Of course, while the covert bombing of Laos was done by Ted Shackley, who is on this list at number one. And Henry Kissinger needed to know that he had a guy that would keep his mouth shut and it wouldn't wind up all over the papers that we were actually doing that, of course. So Kissinger is a fucking monster, an actual monster in human form, but loyal. Loyal in that circle and trustworthy within that circle. They can count on Henry Kissinger. He's not going to say what he's not supposed to say. He's not going to do what he's not supposed to do, and he's not going to get caught. And if he does get caught, you know he's got enough get out of jail free cards that nothing's going to ever happen to him. He was a deeply supportive of the Khmer Rouge death squads, the murders of Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. He worked with that government. He worked with the government of East Timor. They murdered 25% of their population. The Cambodians murdered 25% of their population as well. He was involved in the death squads in Central America and South America. He ordered Operation Condor. That was under him, Henry Kissinger's watch. I mean, this is a guy that knows how to get things done with blood on his hands. So again, there's no moral hangup for this guy ordering 9/11. He's a member of the Committee of 300. He's a member of the Trilateral Commission. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's a member of the Aspen Institute. He's a member of the Clinton Foundation. He was deeply involved in Watergate. He's the guy. He authorized the sale of nuclear hardware to the Soviet Union in the 1970s, right before we had the Cold War in the 80s. He's a depopulationist, but he's trusted. He's pro-war. He's a deep operator, but he's trusted. So let's do this. Let's go back real quick. Let's just recap this, because I know I threw a lot of information about a lot of people that you may or may not have heard of before. Listen, I think Le Cercle is the common denominator here. I think that the guys that were a part of that group are the ones that did 9/11, masterminded the management of it. The board of directors for 9/11, Ted Shackley, JFK, Iran-Contra, Lockerbie bombing, CIA in Laos, Le Cercle, Frank Carlucci, CIA, Secretary of Defense, NSA, NED, Rand Corporation, Carlyle Group, Donald Rumsfeld, NATO, White House, Secretary of Defense, twice, Rand, Monsanto, Le Cercle, George H.W. Bush, United Nations, China on behalf of Rockefeller, CIA, Vice President, President of the United States, Carlyle Group, Henry Kissinger, Rockefeller, United Nations, Bush, CFR, NATO, Harvard, Le Cercle. These are the guys. These are the guys that plotted it. They brought in Bandar Bush for the Saudis, head of intelligence. They brought in Benazir Bhutto, Le Cercle, later assassinated, Pakistani ISI, prime minister. They brought in the Israelis, Benjamin Netanyahu, Shimon Peres, both former prime ministers of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, prime minister at the time, both members, Le Cercle. There's always more to know about 9/11. I would never pretend to have every single component of it figured out. But look, I think if you're going to get honest about who is really involved in this and to escape from mere generalizations like it was an inside job, well, yes and no. It was an inside and outside job. You couldn't have done this just from the inside. You had to have help on the outside as well. Every good prison break has help from the outside. We know that. Question is who you can trust. Who's going to make sure that you've got a getaway car when you do this thing? Who's not going to leave you hanging? Who's not going to, you know, get high the night before and sleep through their alarm clock? When you've got Ted Shackley, Frank Carlucci, Donald Rumsfeld, Henry Kissinger, and George H.W. Bush involved in an operation, you know it's going to get done. It's going to get done quietly, and there's going to be a lot of blood and smoke and human wreckage in the aftermath of that. Because that's what these guys do. They're destroyers. And what they did with 9/11 is unforgivable. Hey, if you like this episode, you think it might be interesting for somebody that you know, you could take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. You can find me on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast. I write books. I've written books about this. If you're interested in getting my books, The Octopus of Global Control, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and Hypocrisy, Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards, go to my website, take a look for yourself, check it out. You can find them on Amazon as well. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.